Thank you so much for joining us for Spirit, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for Spirit. The OU started Spirit several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everyone who is looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, Spirit continues to be the safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is one that is so important to all of us, particularly at this time of the year when we're approaching so many of our holidays and we do always do a lot of eating. So our program today is called A Healthier Plate, One Meal at a Time. We are so happy to welcome to the Spirit Forum Anna Delapaz, MS, and RD, who will be presenting today. This program is coming from the New York Hospital, New York Presbyterian Hospital of Queens, that has presented so many, many programs for us, and we really appreciate all of their help. It is my pleasure and honor to turn the Spirit over to Anna Delapaz. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us.
Hi, thank you all so much for joining. My name's Anna. Like Judy said, I'm a dietitian at New York Presbyterian Queens, and I'm gonna give the presentation today about navigating a healthy diet. So let me share my screen now. All right, so I'm gonna jump right in. I have a lot of information here. So any questions, if you can jot them down and save them for the end, I'll be happy to go over with you and we'll get started. So I have three objectives in this presentation. The first is to explore the link between diet and common chronic health conditions. Secondly, I want to examine studies that demonstrate the importance of making informed food choices and a healthy nutrition. And then lastly, to identify foods that can prevent disease and help you live longer. So first, just kind of our call to action here, looking at why nutrition is so important. I want to look at the link between diet and health. So looking at the US in particular, is responsible for over $1 trillion spent on prescription drugs worldwide. And looking at countries across the world, we're seeing increases in prescription drugs for chronic health conditions. Around 70% of Americans take prescription drugs regularly. This is especially important because we're looking at which drugs are prescribed or often for health conditions that can be prevented through nutrition. So the two most prescribed drugs are high blood pressure and high cholesterol. This is really, really important because we're looking at both of these conditions are associated with poor nutrition, overnutrition, obesity, and things like that. So that's really why we want to look at ways that we can shape our meals to promote health so we can live longer and not be reliant on these medications as much as possible. So looking at obesity trends, this is in the US. So you can see the just upward trajectory over the years. And we're seeing an increase in severe obesity, and obesity alone. This is looking at adults 20 years and older. Obesity is defined as a BMI of 30 to 39, and severe obesity is over 40. So like a healthy BMI is around 25. And nearly one in three adults are overweight in the United States. Again, this is heavily linked to diet. So I do want to touch on the use of BMI as a measure of health. A lot of the studies that I'm going to include in this presentation cite BMI as an indication of a healthy versus a non-healthy individual. And I know there's some controversy around that. So just as some information, BMI is completely based off of height and weight. So it doesn't take muscle mass into consideration, which is the main controversy around using it, but it is a simple, inexpensive, and a non-invasive way to measure body fat. High BMI correlates with morbidity and death. If we're looking at like professional athletes, it's not the best use because we're talking about so much muscle mass there. But for most people, it's an okay usage. And so therefore, we're going to use it as an appropriate measure for screening for health risks. All right, so what is that link between diet and health? The first thing, I just have a couple studies in here just to back up some of the overarching themes that we'll all use. First is the China Cornell Oxford Project. So there's a book here that's really interesting. You can read the quick synopsis on Wikipedia. But generally, just to give you a rundown, it's a study that looked at 65 countries in rural China and examined their dietary patterns. So within this, there were 6,500 people chosen to be studied. And the reason they did these different regions of China is they were all genetically similar. So looking at the way diet impacts each family could be extrapolated for greater findings. So they looked at how often they were eating certain foods with like a frequency questionnaire. And most often it fell into diets heavy in animal products and diets heavy in plants. Materials. So what they found overall is that high fat and meat and low fiber was linked to obesity and greater incidences of cancer. There was a strong correlation between eating a plant-based diet and lower risk of heart disease. So I think that these, this is like a very broad result that came out of this study, but I think it's really important to support the addition of more plant products in your diet. Of course, we can always have meat and animal products in the diet, but I just really want to highlight some ways that we can add in more of that fiber and less saturated fat, which is going to be what ended up causing the obesity and cancer. So that leads me to talking about what foods we can add to our plate. I'm going to go over a couple key ones that I think are easier additions for every day. So the first one is going to be berries. So I really advocate having a serving of berries per day. A healthy diet includes 2 cups of fruit daily. So that's just like the USDA recommendation is to have 2 cups of fruit day. What I would love to see is 1/4 of a cup be of berries. Now that can be frozen, fresh, any berry will do. I really like promoting berries to make up a part of your fruit intake because they're low sugar. So much of berries are water and there's fiber. So all those seeds, like you see on the blackberry, that's adding fiber in, which is going to reduce the speed at which it turns to sugar in your system because it just slows down the digestion there, which I'll go over more in a little bit. And adding 1 serving of berries could result in a 24% decrease in the risk of COPD. Which I'll go over the kind of the mechanism of that on the next slide. But like I said, it can be frozen or fresh. You can add them in, you can cook them into things, anything like that, but it's a relatively small amount and might be easy to work into different meals. So berries, the reasoning behind me wanting you to add those in is because of their immune supporting functions and cancer fighting abilities, which can prevent liver, brain diseases, like I was saying, the COPD. The reason behind that is because they're so high in antioxidants. So just to give like a quick, simple understanding of antioxidants, when we encounter just everyday life, when you walk outside in the anywhere, you're exposing yourself to pollution, car exhaust, cigarette smoke, all these things that are just in the air. And what happens is that gets in your body and those cells are looking to bond to your healthy cells. So what we want to do is take in these antioxidants, which essentially go in and neutralize the free radicals. So the antioxidants essentially cleans your body. That's the reason why we can prevent things like COPD, because it's keeping your lungs healthy. And if you look here, so apples contain around 60 units of antioxidants, whereas a cup of blackberries is 650. So anything with color, like fruits and vegetables, has the antioxidants in there. but the berries are just so much higher than so many other fruits and vegetables. So like here it's with oatmeal, you can add it in with yogurt. The combination of what berries can go with doesn't affect their antioxidant ability, it just boosts the nutritional value. Here's an idea for a berry recipe. So with each one, I'll give you a little idea of a way you could mix it in. So this is really good, probably more when it gets a little bit warmer, but a cup of frozen blackberries, which is easier to keep on hand, half a frozen banana, 2 cups of your choice of milk, and then 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed, and you can do a handful of mint. So you're getting antioxidants from the blackberries and the mint mainly. Your protein source is coming in with the 2 cups of your choice of milk. I have questions often about the nutritional benefits of plant-based milks like oat milk, almond milk, and they're all great. All of those are fortified with calcium and vitamin D, just like regular cow's milk. So if you're lactose intolerant or you just prefer to avoid cow's milk, any of those plant-based alternatives are great. And then the ground flaxseed, I love to promote this, especially for smoothies, because you do not taste it. And it adds a lot of fiber and omega-3s, which are those healthy fats that prevent inflammation. So either as a snack or a breakfast, this is really a good choice, the smoothie here, because it's usually pretty quick to whip up. And it's easier to have a lot of these things on hand because you're not as reliant on fresh produce if you do the blackberries, and you can freeze bananas ahead of time as well. So that's just a little idea there. And then for the second food or group that I really want to emphasize the importance of are grains, beans, and legumes. So I would love to see beans, whole grains, one of those two with each meal. One study found that people who consume whole grains, doesn't matter their other dietary habits, live longer. A study conducted in 2015, you might be familiar with the Nurses Health Study, which followed a group of nurses for over 10 years to track their dietary patterns and incidence of disease, found that adding 28 grams of fiber per day correlated with a lower risk of death and a lower risk of heart disease. So that lower risk of death comes from a lower instance of chronic disease all around. I'll go over what a whole grain is exactly, but you'll see here, like in the photo, we have our brown rices, oatmeal, things like that that's having a lot of fiber. So whole grains can cut the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, obesity, and even stroke. So going through kind of the how with some of these, with the heart disease, increased fiber reduces your blood pressure. The fiber gets in your body and it helps dilate those blood vessels and helps the blood flow more easily, which in turn is reducing. So that's making it easier for your heart to function. It's also really good to prevent type 2 diabetes because when your body eats carbohydrate, they essentially turn to energy or sugar, which increases your blood sugar. However, when you have fiber in the mix, it's slowing everything down. So the way you can think about it is we're adding roughage. It's making your body work harder to break down those sugars. So because of that, you're getting a more sustained source of energy instead of in comparison if you have a can of soda that's just immediate sugar. So, or a better example with looking at fiber would be a slice of white bread versus a slice of wheat bread. That white bread's just instant energy, and the wheat bread is sustaining you, keeping you fuller longer, and comes with a lot of added minerals and vitamins as well. And then this can also go hand in hand with the decreasing risk of obesity because we're looking at feeling fuller longer and getting more of those important nutrients. So going more like what is a whole grain? If you look at this picture here, it's a really simple illustration of like a piece of grain. So grain has 3 main components. You have the germ, the endosperm, and the bran. So with white breads and processed grains, what's happening is they're stripping off that bran outer shell, which it then takes away the fiber. The bran is where the fiber is. It's also where the B vitamins are and the iron. So we really want to keep that bran intact so we get all those added nutrients from our grains. Our daily goal is 3 to 4 ounces per day. And as an idea, 1 ounce looks like half an English muffin, half a cup of cooked oatmeal, or one slice of bread. So it's usually pretty easy for most people to hit that daily amount just because an ounce doesn't make up that much of the grains. So as much as you can to switch to whole grains, if it's something that you just really notice the difference in taste with, I advise people to do half and half. If you want to make pasta, make half of it whole grain, half of it regular, something to just slowly get yourself used to having a little bit more fiber in your diet. All right, and then with beans. So having one serving of beans and legumes at every meal gives you that important protein that we're looking for, and it's a plant-based protein. So we're not looking at any saturated fat there. Of course, we want to think about how they're being cooked. As long as you're not adding in like a lot of the fats, generally beans are a really good source of protein that has so much fiber and important B vitamins, which are really good for sustaining energy. And especially I'll highlight lentils as well. But lentils can cut spikes in blood sugar even hours after a meal. So studies found that that added fiber from the lentils stays with you and prevents the spikes in blood sugar, or like, you know, if you just all of a sudden feel tired, something like that. Mm-hmm. Recipe right here. I wanted to highlight it, and I also just want to highlight the NIH. So the NIH is a really good place to go if you want to look for kind of easily digestible research material around food, but also they have really good recipes. So especially like right now, you know, depending where you are, but in a lot of places it's a bit chilly, this lentil soup can really be a nutrition-filled meal. So we have a lot of veggies in here. Also, we'll highlight this, the dried oregano and basil. Those are really good sources of antioxidants. And then the lentils. So we're looking at so much fiber right there. And then we have like the instructions and stuff. The NIH is really good about giving you detailed info about the nutrition facts here. So you'll see it's very low in sodium, it's high in fiber. And we're looking at some protein too. You can also add a lean protein to this, like chicken or something like that. And then a couple more ways to think about lentils. So depending how you cook them, they can be extremely flavorful, or they can be a little bit more on the bland side if you don't want to season them up and kind of hide them a little bit. I bring that up because there was a research group that examined a group of people, their blood sugar after eating 1 cup of mashed potatoes versus a half a cup of mashed potatoes with a half a cup of mashed lentils. And they found that the lentil group had a 70% decrease in after meal blood sugar. So it's a really, if you are open to trying something a little bit new, you can get some lentils. I would probably do like the red lentils and then cook, steam them and mix them with the mashed potato or something that's a little bit more flavorful. And you could be looking at a real decrease in the carbohydrate content of your meal. And then I also want to highlight nuts and seeds, going into a little more detail here. So nuts and seeds are really good sources of healthy fats, fiber, and protein. So some super nutritious seeds are chia seeds, hemp, pumpkin, sesame, and sunflower. You can get these in all types of ways, just whether you want to snack on nuts and seeds. Chia seeds and hemp seeds are really easy to add into smoothies as well. Sesame seeds are easy as a garnish. And then with pumpkin and sunflower, those are really good low-calorie seeds to add into like a trail mix if you wanted to make your own. A single serving of seeds is a quarter cup of whole seeds or 2 tablespoons of a seed butter. And with seed butters, looking for the ones that have the least amount of ingredients is always ideal. We want to watch out just for like added oils and added sugar with most of those. But if you read the label and it just contains, you know, the salts and the nuts, that's ideally what we want to see. And then just keeping seeds on hand is a good way to add them as, you know, on top of toast, as a garnish, things like that, that might be easy to forget. So for, in terms of like looking at the most nutritious nuts, walnuts are such a great option because they have so many of these omega-3s, which are the fats, like I mentioned earlier, that decrease inflammation in the body. Other omega-3s that you might be aware of is like salmon, avocado, olive oil, things like that. So those are really good for the skin, the heart, things like that. They also have antioxidants in here. And so the main thing when looking at nuts is going to be the healthy fats. They do have some protein, but I wouldn't rely on nuts as your sole source of, you know, a protein in a meal. All right, so jumping to herbs and spices. These, I really like to highlight herbs and spices because I think that it can be easy to forget the nutrition impact of these because they essentially have no calories, but they're so, so important. So herbs and spices have the highest level of antioxidants out of any food group. And what I really like about this is the dried versions have even higher. So there's such an emphasis a lot of times when thinking about a healthy diet of getting fresh things, which is 100% accurate, but also having things like dried basil on hand, dried oregano on hand, and just adding that where you can boost your antioxidant content of your meals so high. So looking here at easy ways to add herbs, one example that I want to highlight is if you have a bowl of pasta. So if you have a bowl of pasta with tomato sauce and broccoli, it's going to have around 150 units of antioxidants. If you add a single teaspoon of oregano to the mix, it raises it to 300. So you're looking at a double amount of antioxidants per bowl, and you didn't increase it by any calories. You just added flavor through the oregano. You can use fresh or the dried, but like I said, dried's a bit more concentrated. But they are different flavors and used in different ways. So both can be on hand if you have that option. Now there is one spice that is the top when thinking about nutrition value and has a bit of its own superpower, which is turmeric. So I know that a lot of people like turmeric and take supplements and all this stuff, and turmeric is so fantastic. I do want to talk about ways to keep it in through your diet. You can always talk to your doctor about a supplemental use, but I think when thinking about herbs and supplements, I like to promote the use of them in whole foods, because when you're talking about adding these superpower antioxidant ingredients to a meal, you're getting every other benefit along with that meal. You know, if you're adding turmeric into your cooking vegetables or a curry, you're talking about getting the vitamin C from carrots, the fiber from rice, things like that. Whereas if you pop a supplement pill, we're just looking at that with nothing else. And a lot of times it's almost 1,000 times more than the amount that you would get in a powdered form. So I personally advocate for getting as much as you can through whole foods and filling in the gaps where it's needed, like through a multivitamin or something like that. So with turmeric, it contains the curcumin, which is the main compound that's responsible for anti-inflammatory properties. And this is the thought behind it protecting against cancers, chronic diseases. Just a quarter of a teaspoon daily, dried or fresh, is highly recommended. You can get the fresh turmeric. It almost looks like a ginger root from the groceries, from many grocery stores I've seen. And you can chop that up and freeze it if you want to add it to dishes. People with gallstones and to a lesser degree kidney stones should limit the intake. It just can cause abdominal pain. So you could ask your doctor before working in turmeric if you're dealing with any of those issues. But otherwise, it's a really great ingredient that can be added to a lot of dishes. So here's a tea recipe. This is a little bit simpler if you're not used to using turmeric in like a savory dish. So you can do the dry turmeric with ginger, cinnamon stick, the black peppercorn. So black pepper helps your body absorb the curcumin. You will often see the, if you're looking at the supplements, the turmeric will come with black pepper as an ingredient. So just try to remember if you're using turmeric to add in pepper as well. And then honey, milk of your choice, and a black tea bag. So this is just a very warming beverage that you're getting, looking at a lot of antioxidants right here. And it's just a healthy beverage alternative to like a sweeter, like hot chocolate or something like that, if you wanted an idea to mix it up. So looking at a spice specific study, I do want to highlight this 2010 study that found that saffron displayed better cognitive function abilities in participants than placebo. So with saffron, that is a very expensive spice, of course, you can look at an option of like supplements or talk to your doctor about that, or if you're able to work it into your meals. But there's also other studies that show similar benefits that were a bit more accessible, such as clove, cinnamon, oregano, and nutmeg. So these were really important with keeping, they looked at how this affected patients with depression, and it showed to have a significant benefit. So these are easier to work in, dried, you can do fresh, anything like that. But basically, just with this study, I wanted to highlight the power of spices and the importance of keeping a variety around, and not to really, you don't have to emphasize too much on any particular one, but every day, just kind of working in some throughout each meal can have different benefits all around. Okay, and then I want to look at hydration. So thinking about staying hydrated, of course, the gold standard is water. At least everyone should consume at least 5 12-ounce beverages a day. And of these five, I would really like to see most of them water. You can do warm water, cold water, all great options. There's also like the no sugar flavor packets, or you can put pieces of fruit in there if you just don't like the blandness of water. But I also have some examples of other more flavorful options like hibiscus tea. So hibiscus tea has a ton of antioxidants in it. That deep red color comes with so much nutrition impact. This has been linked to a significant drop in blood pressure in pre-hypertensive patients. So here I just give you an example of what pre-hypertensive blood pressure looks like. But this comes from a Tufts University, a double-blind study where they looked at 3 cups per day of just plain hibiscus tea. So nothing else added, and they found noticeable effects in just 2 weeks. So that's a very short amount of time. And hibiscus tea is really, you can find it at every grocery store. So give it a try and see if you like the taste, because you could be looking at just a lot of antioxidants there, and then through the staying hydrated. Another thing is coffee. So I get people ask me sometimes about the if coffee's good for you, bad for you. And it is good for you. What I really want to look at is if you're adding anything into your coffee, you can, any, you know, milks are fine. I really look more at like if you're adding sugar in, I'm trying to reduce that as much as possible. But alone, coffee is high in antioxidants, comparable to green tea, and it can be beneficial for lowering the risk of diabetes, blood pressure, and just overall health. So we're thinking about like 2 to 3 cups a day. Once you get more than that, that's can be a lot of caffeine intake unless you're doing decaf. That's totally fine. Another thing to think about if you're doing caffeinated coffee is just to make sure it doesn't interact with any of the medications, if you're taking any, because that can be a common contraindication. But other than that, please enjoy your coffee. I think it's really a great source of hydration in moderation. So those are kind of the things that I wanted to focus on for looking at your plate. I'll do a little recap at the end just so you have an idea again of what those were. But now I just want to look beyond the plate for a holistic health assessment. And we want to add in exercise for longevity. So sedentary lifestyle is linked to mortality because it increases the risk of chronic disease. As we saw in that obesity chart, we're just seeing more and more weight and chronic health problems. And one way to really help with that is staying active. It doesn't have to be anything intense. I don't need you to be running every day, but things like yoga, low impact exercises are a really great way to maintain that muscle mass, which is really important for preventing, you know, falls. We don't really want to see any chronic hospital admits, anything like that. So keeping active is just a helpful along with a healthy nutrition. Looking at just the CDC recommendations, generally it's 150 minutes of activity per week plus strength training twice a week. Strength training could look like hand weights or resistance bands, anything like that. And then with physical activity, you could be talking about walking, swimming, anything, exercises that can improve balance. I do like to promote yoga with that because it is a good way to maintain muscle mass and to improve balance and just core strength. A lot of those can be found on YouTube videos, or some community centers have like yoga classes and workout classes and things like that. Also, if you happen to have an iPhone, you may be familiar with just tracking your steps. If you're someone who walks very often, I like to just keep a look at how many steps you're getting in per day to get an idea on the average, and seeing if you can increase that amount if you feel comfortable walking around and stuff like that. But just so you know, you're probably carrying the tracker in your pocket that's keeping up with where you're going. So I like to use that since they already have the information available for you. So the key takeaways from this presentation that I really want to emphasize is, in general, as a population, we are becoming less healthy and more dependent on medications than ever before. And I feel like it's really alarming and can be prevented through diet. And it's never too late. Also, I want to emphasize that. Even if you're on medications, we can still implement a healthy diet to help prevent any further complications. Cancer, heart disease, and liver disease can be prevented by, so really we want to look at a diet rich in plants. With plants, we have so much of that fiber. They're generally low calorie, depending on how you cook them. We want to have all foods really included in your diet. So have anything you're used to, you know, animal products, anything like that, but just making sure that you're making an effort to include more of the superfoods like blackberries, whole grains, spices, the powerhouse there, looking at turmeric, clove, cinnamon, or saffron, and then the legumes and the beans. So if you want to like create a little chart for yourself, just to have these four categories and just check it off when you're able to eat one of them per day, it will take a little bit of thought and planning ahead to include these into your diet every day. But once you start to do it, it can become more and more habit. And once you have these things on hand, it might be easier to work them in every day. And then drinking at least 5 12-ounce glasses of liquid a day. Water is best. It can be, especially if you're not as active, it can be hard to keep track of drinking that much water a day, but just try to kind of make a ritual out of it. If you want to have a glass of hibiscus tea in the morning and the afternoon, with your snack. Just try to make it a little bit more enticing if you're not as into water. And then we want to keep moving. So keep a log of physical activity. You can set realistic goals for yourself. Anything to promote movement, try out a new exercise is a really great way to stay active. If you're interested in learning more, so I like to highlight this book a lot. I get people, I get questions often about, you know, I'm really interested in nutrition, but I don't really know where to start, just overarching. This How Not to Die is written by Dr. Greger, and I think it's a really easy digestible book for that really highlights a lot of studies. So some of the studies that I used in here are highlighted in the book in more detail. And he gives you just a concrete list of changes that you can make in your diet that you will see significant health impacts. So I personally just really enjoy this book, and it is about plant-based eating, just so you know. Thank you so much for listening. This is my email. Please jot it down and take, if I don't get to your question during this talk, feel free to reach out to me and email me with anything, especially if it's a little bit more specific to like any health condition you may have or anything like that. But in terms of any general questions, please add them to the chat, because I think Judy's going to help me here navigate some of those questions and get them answered as best as I can. But again, thanks so much for joining me for the talk.
Anna, thank you so much. It was a wonderful presentation, so appropriate and so necessary. I have one question here. Somebody was actually asking about proteins, the importance of proteins and what are good sources. Do you want to take your screen off? Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So if you could address that.
Yeah, let's talk about proteins. So aside from the plant-based ones that I highlighted in terms of like beans, legumes, and things like that, I like to emphasize lean protein the most. So we're talking about like chicken, lean turkey, fish, and then really thinking about the cooking method with those. So steamed and baked are best. And then beyond that, I want to kind of avoid like any of the fried or battered proteins, because that can have a lot of saturated fat. So pretty much just lean proteins. Try to make at least one of your protein a day plant-based if possible, just to reduce that cholesterol intake and any saturated fat. So there you could be looking at the beans, nuts, tofu, anything like that. And that can take some time to work in if you're not used to that. So just start with a snack here or there.
Somebody was asking about the book. If you could send that to me, we'll put that into the with the recording, so no one has to worry about getting it now. That and your contact info. I don't have any other questions yet. Do you have anything there?
Yes, I do actually. I'm just now noticing them here. Okay, so I'll start with one about protein real quick. What about tofu and what about faux meat like substitutes? Tofu, wonderful source of protein. I myself eat tofu every single day. You can just, I put it in a rice cooker with rice to just steam it, but you can cook it any way that you want. And then what about like the faux meat substitutes? So thinking about like the Gardein chicken nuggets and things like that, or like the pre-made like Beyond Meat patties, those I think I caution against having every day. I think it's okay to have once in a while, but you'll notice if you look at the nutrition facts on those, they have so much sodium, and like some of the alternatives have saturated fat in them as well. So I don't like to emphasize those for every day. I think more emphasizing the use of whole foods is better than getting the frozen substitutes, but they're okay to have every now and then. And you, with looking at like an air fryer, someone's asking if that's reasonable. Absolutely. You can also put like tofu or anything like that in the air fryer, or animal protein. But yes, the air fryer uses less oil than like actually frying something. So I think either doing air fryer or just a normal oven, same difference. And then looking at, this is a good question that I've never had. So is there a difference between using instant oatmeal and regular oatmeal? Nope, they're both great. With the instant oatmeal, the only thing, sometimes the like different flavor ones will have quite a bit of sugar added. So just pay attention to that. But if you're doing plain instant oatmeal, totally fine. And then the best way to flavor it will be using either fresh or frozen fruit that you add yourself. And then you can add a tablespoon of brown sugar or honey. Anything that you add to it is going to be less sugar than what's in those packets that are already sweetened. So just keep in mind what you're adding in. Yes, Susan, you're right to eat the turmeric with the black pepper. True. And then Patty asks, what about canned beans? Are they as helpful as dried beans? Absolutely, yes. Canned beans are more convenient. With that, you want to just look at the sodium content. That's pretty much the only thing that's going to sneak up on you with canned beans. Dried beans are more inexpensive, and you can make them in like a larger, in a bulk amount if you're interested in like kind of a meal prepping situation. But canned beans, fantastic. I personally use them because they're quicker.
I have a question here. Can you distinguish between beans, legumes, and lentils?
Sure. So with beans and legumes, the difference is with legumes, like a peanut is technically a legume. It's anything that grows on a vine. Nutritionally, though, they're all lumped together because they're all low in carbohydrates, high in protein, and high in fiber. So nutritionally, we just look at them all the same.
Okay. Are dairy products inflammatory?
They are, yeah. Generally, dairy products are more inflammatory because you're looking at the saturated fat content. If you want to go with the least inflammatory, you can do non-fat milk or like 1%. But another alternative to that would be like plant milks. Now, yogurts, not inflammatory because you're looking at so much of the probiotics in there. And that's just because of the like fermentation there. But in like whole milk, cheese, and things like that generally are pretty inflammatory because of the fat content. And then I have a couple other ones if I can.
Sure, go.
Okay, are artificial sweeteners or sugar alternatives good for diabetics? That's a really good question. Yeah, absolutely. So I, and then specifically citing monk fruit. Yes, so any of those alternative sweeteners are good for diabetics because they're not increasing your blood sugar. There's some controversy over using things like Equal and Sweet and Low, but in terms of the literal impact it has on your body, your blood sugar is not going to increase. So especially if you're someone who's used to doing like 3 or 4 packets of sugar in your coffee, if you can just use 1 packet of artificial sweetener, that's much, much better. And then the monk fruit and like stevia are marketed as like the more natural sugar alternatives. And I think both are great. If it kind of just comes down to different tastes. So if you're fine with the taste and you prefer things sweeter, definitely do that. And then someone said, let's see, instead of using rice and pasta, I use hearts of palm spaghetti and rice. Is that beneficial? Definitely. There's also, along the same lines, there's the like lentil pasta. There's a lot of alternatives out there, chickpea pasta, things like that. Those have more fiber. So the main hindrance for most people is they don't like the taste. But if you're okay with the taste and like sometimes different texture situation, perfect. Exactly. And then Susan cites a study that showed that like sweeteners and the incidence of stroke. I definitely know what you're talking about, Susan. It is, that's what I mean in terms of the controversy around the use of artificial sweeteners. But like I said, if it comes down to you having food that has a lot of sugar in it versus not, I just say go with, you know, you can, usually most of the time find something that says, you know, it's okay. It's not going to be more, it's not going to hurt you more than having a high amount of sugar in like your meals. So it's up to you. You can also do your own research on that if you prefer.
If somebody's asking about tofu, they want to know about the estrogen content.
Yep. So some people shy away from too much soy product because of the estrogen amount. But I personally haven't seen a study that significantly shows that the soy content, that the estrogen content in soy has actually impacted health. I think that's a little bit of a belief that was around a number of years ago. So there's plenty of cultures that heavily rely on tofu as protein, and there's no sign of estrogen being a negative impact there. Okay. And then real quick, Melanie asked if white rice is unhealthy, and no, not at all. White rice is a carb source that provides energy, and a lot of people eat white rice. Technically, brown rice does have more fiber and B vitamins, but if that's something that you don't want to switch over to because they can taste a bit different, you can keep the white rice. Just do any other grains that you eat, have the wheat version if possible. You can do moderation there.
Another request for the book. So do you want to show it again so people can just at least see it now?
How Not to Die by Dr. Greger, but I'll show you the book.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, well, if you could just include that in, you know, maybe we could get an Amazon link or something and put that in with the recording.
Sure, yeah, no problem.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I don't think I have any other questions on my end.
Okay, and I don't see anything more over here. Okay, well, I want to thank you so much. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be taking a break next week because next Tuesday is Purim. So everybody should have a wonderful Chag Sameach. Keep in mind all that you learned today when you're at your Purim Suda eating, or at least try to. And when all the nosh comes in, you know, we can, you know, maybe give that away. Because we know that all the stuff that comes in is probably none of which we should be eating. Nobody gives healthy stuff in Shalach Manas. So everybody should think about that. And then we'll be back in 2 weeks, but as was Hashem, for another hybrid program for anybody who is in the Hollywood Fort Lauderdale area. We'll be at Young Israel of Hollywood Fort Lauderdale. You'll be getting more information. And we'll be having another program about Israel real estate. And that'll be actually not at 11, it'll be 11:30, but you will see that in the registration. So you can join us on site or online. Everybody take care, have a great week, have a wonderful Shabbos and a beautiful Chag Purim Sameach. Take care, thank you everybody. And thank you, Anna, for a wonderful program.
Thanks, Judy, for having me, thank you.